Yeah, with all those other jobs, the one job that I did enjoy was a summer job when I first got out of high school. Worked for the oiling crew, and there was four or five of us that batched, and we traveled all over eastern Oregon.
Oiling crew,
oiling
what
crew
is that?
Repairing highway, and we all... guy that's still in town, Ken Lilly, that's a retired school person. He and I worked together on an oiling crew and drove truck, and they oiled the road and dumped gravel on it and rolled it. And it was a big crew, probably, 35, 40 people on it. And we traveled from Hermiston to Ontario, down Burns, John Day, and all around. Worked two or three summers for that, and then when at Oregon State, the one summer I was down there, I worked at Camp Adair when they built the camp when the war started.
So did a lot of GIs work a lot of different jobs when they came home?
I think probably a lot of them did. They were trying to find something to do if they didn't go back to school. Although, you know, they say the GI Bill was the greatest thing that Congress ever passed for the country, because it raised the whole level of education for the nation. And so that was a real boon to the economy of the U.S.
So how much? What percentage do you think of people that came back to LeGrand used the GI Bill? Did most of them, or did most of them go back into different trades? Or
I think probably the ones that came back to LeGrand might have been about half and half. A lot of them went back to the trades, or had a farm, or their folks were farmers and they took over the farm, that sort of thing.
But did former GIs get together and talk about their experiences over
afterwards the American Legion was strong here in LeGrand. They had a drum and bugle corps, and all of the Legion, well, there were a few World War One veterans that still were kind of the cornerstone of the Legion and held it together, but then the new guys that came back kind of took over. And I was commander of the Legion post here in LeGrand once, and in the drum and bugle corps. Was really active in that. I'm a total music nerd. I can't play anything. Lucky to play the radio, but a bugle that doesn't have valves, any note will harmonize, so I play the bugle. And we had three or four that were really good musicians, and you could follow them. I couldn't read notes, but could march, and they had a good unit.
So you marched in parades?
Parades, yeah, mm-hmm. All over. But then it got involved in the Elks.
So the purpose of that organization was to welcome people home? What was the purpose of that?
Of the Legion?
Yeah.
Well, nationally, it's a lobbying organization for the veterans, of course. and then it's kind of became a local social organization for veterans. And the Legion seemed to always be I don't know whether it's because they had more members, but a little stronger organization than the VFW. The VFW is still a viable organization, as is the Legion, but Legion seemed to attract more people.
Do you remember what year you were the captain?
Oh, man, no, I don't, for sure. 9 years in the Yokes, and I, before that, probably I was in the Legion for, well, I'm still a member, but I think maybe it was probably about 51, 52, something like that.
It sounds like it was a really active.
Yeah, it was a pretty active.
Is it still that one?
Yeah, they have the building down there on the corner of Jefferson and Fur. Mm-hmm. And they've remodeled it. It's pretty nice. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Baker had a real strong Legion program, too.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's go back to the high school. So you were hired as the driver's ed and the ski team. And this was just a halftime position?
Yeah, and I think I had one crafts class, because all my hours in education was pretty much in industrial arts. And so then...
What did you do the other other half of your
Well, that's job. When I worked at the mill out at Island City. And then Dale Wyatt and I, he was just starting to, he was over at the junior high. We split a bus route. He drove one in the morning and I drove the same route in the afternoon. And then the second year, I got a full-time contract. Still had the ski club and ski team and... I got into the shop classes, taught drafting, mechanical drawing, and had a couple of craft classes, and then eventually I was full-time wood shop and drafting.
What kind of crafts did you teach students?
Oh, I had leather work, and We made little ashtrays with held up a tin thing and then line it with tile, just different things like that.
Did you continue the scouting? Were you still part of scouting?
No.
When you came back?
I didn't ever go back to scouting.
Mm-hmm.
As a scout leader or anything, wasn't involved. Got involved with Special Olympics in high school. In high school, after my daughter conned me into that.
So this was in the 50s? Late
50s? Yeah, and then I...
So was that an organization that was begun here?
Well, no, Special Olympics is a national thing.
They had a Special Olympics?
Yeah, my daughter kind of ran the Special Olympics program, and she got me to help her with a ski program in it, and then she ended up when the International Special Olympics was in Park City. She was an Oregon coach, and then the next Olympics when they were at Squaw Balhang, I was an Oregon coach. Special Olympics and took the Oregon team. And then after that, Special O Oregon K did it as a volunteer, and then they hired somebody to do that, and she was teaching special ed and didn't want to do that as a hired thing, and so she quit, so I kind of quit too, but we still... I helped run the program when they run their races at Anthony Lakes and everything, so kind of stuck with that.
So how long were you the shop teacher, the crafts teacher?
Oh, let's see. my term was actual teaching was, I think I only taught for 6 years, seven, something like that. And then because I started late, I thought, well, I better get into the most money I can make. And so I went back to school and I got a master's, and then I got
in,
it
in teacher education,
yeah.
MTE?
Uh-huh.
Was that from Eastern?
Eastern, yeah. And got my master's and took all the administrative courses I could and got my administrator's certificate, and that's when I got the vice principal's job.
What year was that you got the vice principal job?
1964.
Well, that was a time of quite a bit of unrest in the country.
Yeah, that was the hippie era.
So how did that translate to LeGrand? Did they have any hippies at the high school?
Oh, yeah. I remember sending a kid home for wearing sandals to school and medallions around their neck. Man. Yeah, it was different.
Was it a...
LeGrand wasn't too bad that way. The one I sent home was a kid that came from outside. I don't know, came from Portland or somewhere. And we didn't have too much trouble, I think. And really, the drug thing wasn't the problem then. It came later because the only thing... there's a lot of beer parties, you know, and keggers around, but no hard drugs.
Did the students ever protest the war or up in any of that kind of ways?
I don't think we had any of that in LeGrand. No, the LeGrand kids were pretty... Oh, the music came along then, you know.
The rock music?
The rock and roll and everything, but it wasn't too bad. Our after-game dances, the only thing about those, I could come home after those dances and still feel the drum beat in my innards almost, you know. But...
Did the students change between the 60s and 70s? Did you notice any kind of change in their behavior, how they acted, what their attitudes were like?
Well, I think we had a lot of rules that I don't know why we had them. Several things that made me think about it is... Well, for one thing, a married student, if a student got married, they couldn't participate in athletics or any extracurricular activity. And even in PE, I remember that being the early 60s. If a gal was married, she couldn't take PE. I'm not sure what the rule, why, you know, because... One time later, a gal that runs a beauty salon here in LeGrand now, I ran into her after she graduated, I think in Ontario. And she said, came up and said, "Do you remember me?" And I said, "Yes." And she says, "Well, you wouldn't let me take PE in high school because I got married when I was a senior. Why?" And I couldn't answer. You know, I said, "I don't know." You know, it was the dumb rule at the time. Mm-hmm. And later on, it didn't really make any sense. Mm-hmm. And I remember a pretty good football player that got married when he was a senior and they didn't let him play. Mm. But, so some of those things, I think, changed probably for the better.
Mm-hmm. When did you become the principal?
I was principal at the high school in 1 year, and Dale was president of Oregon Education Association. Must have been about 71, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was principal at the junior high for 2 years, and that was a 1 year was a nightmare because they changed to a 4-year high school from the 3-year, anticipating that we'd get in the new addition on the high school. Well, it wasn't finished, so we didn't get in. Well, here we had a four-year high school and no place to put the extra year of kids. So the junior high, I was principal at the junior high. So we intermingled all of the English classes from 7th grade through 12th was in the old junior high school. So you had seniors mixed in with 7th graders. And then some of the, all the 7th graders stayed there, I think. Some of the 8th graders and some of the 9th graders went to the high school. Kids were coming and going between the two schools. You didn't know where they were. Mm-hmm. It was a heyday for the kid to come late to class because he could always say, well, I was over at the high school and Mr. So-and-so, he kept us after class.
Oh.
Yeah, it was a real zoo.
So what was the difference between being a principal at the high school and a principal at the junior high? Which did you like better?
The high school. Particularly because the junior high at that time, when it was 7th, 8th, and 9th, the 9th graders got the idea that they were the big wheels in the 3 years. Well, then, when they went over as a sophomore, they were low down on the totem pole. It really hurt some of the kids, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But the 9th graders were a pain in the neck, really, you know. And they thought they were really big time. And then the poor old 7th graders, they were kind of out of place. They were a little young. And everything's a major crisis with them, you know. So, and friendships, you know, and be buddy-buddy one time and enemies the next.
Mm-hmm.
And emotions up and down. I like the high school as an age group better.
They kind of even.
And then the last 3 or 4 years after we got all the buildings built and everything away, then I went in the superintendent's office. They didn't hire an assistant superintendent. And the superintendent at that time decided he wanted 3 directors, one of curriculum in the grade school, one for curriculum in secondary schools, and then the other director was going to be kind of the catch-all guy in plant and operations. And at that time, we still had our own school buses. So I got that directorship and had all the cooks, classified employees as the personnel, and then all the maintenance of the buildings in the whole district. So that was a pretty good job. I enjoyed that. The only thing I missed, I moved around. I got to go to every school, so I kind of still had contact with teachers, but I lost track of kids. The best part, I think, on the education was when I taught driver ed, because I had every sophomore in school. So in a period of 3 years, I knew every kid in the high school. And
so what was it like being the driver's ed teacher? Did you ever fear for your life?
It was harrowing at times. I rode through a few parking lots when I didn't mean to.
Any major crashes?
No. Had a deaf guy backed into us one time downtown, and we were stopped at a light. He backed out of a slant parking, and that was a little confusing because he couldn't hear what I was talking about.
What kind of cars did the driver's ed program use when you first started?
MJ Goss furnished the cars, Chevrolets.
Uh-huh.
And when we first started the program, we insisted on a stick shift clutch car. And then it got to where they were harder to get, and so they finally went Yeah, it was a good program. The state contributed, and then insurance companies gave a discount if a kid had passed a driver ed course, so parents liked it. Mm-hmm.
So how did you end your career at the high school? Or
no, I was in the directorship, and I quit.
When was your class?
I quit in 1983, so I've been retired almost as long as I worked.
And what have you spent your retirement doing? What
have you been doing? Well, involved heavily with a ski program in the Northwest. I was on the board of directors of that, Ski Instructors of America, and ran ski school at Spout Springs and Anthony Lakes. And so that pretty
well. When did you start running the Anthony Lakes program?
Well, I quit at Spout when they had a kind of a goofy owner. and my kids were all teaching at Anthony Lakes. They wanted to get away from their dad at Spout Springs. So I thought, well, I'll just go over there and maybe teach a little.
Was this after you retired?
I think it was. Mm-hmm. Or maybe it was the last year, I can't remember.
So in the early 80s?
Anyway, I just thought I'd go over and ski with them and teach. And so when I got over there, and I think I taught. Well, Spout always closed a month before Anthony Lakes, so after I got through at Spout, I'd go to Anthony Lakes and just teach. And so, anyway, then I went over, and the guy that was running a ski school then, he kind of wanted some help, and then he got interested in Nordic and going other places for races, and I kind of eased into the ski school that way, and pretty soon he wanted out, Dick Knowles.
Mm-hmm. Have you always been a cross-country ski person or a downhill?
No,
or a
boat? I've always been downhill. Well, then I started cross-country, and I taught that a little bit. But I always thought that's why God invented chairlifts, so you didn't have to walk uphill. But anyway, I ended up running the ski school over there, and finally retired from that.
When was that that you retired from the ski?
About 4 years ago, mm-hmm. I guess. Mm-hmm. Was all. And so I've just been kind of still on the staff and have a place to leave my skis and could teach when I wanted to. Mm-hmm. And this year I don't think I'll teach at all. Well, you ski free almost everywhere if you're old enough.
Yeah, so.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So you said that you kind of were a reluctant teacher. It doesn't sound like you really wanted to go into education, and then you did. So what did you get out of teaching? What kept you in teaching once you started?
Well, I've always said that it's the only job I ever had that I didn't feel like I didn't want to get up and go to work on Monday. I always thought it was fun to go to work. And the only reason I retired or got out of teaching was when I was in the directorship thing. I had to go to all the school board meetings, and they weren't any fun. I didn't like that end up. And as long as you were dealing with the kids and the actual teaching, it was okay. In fact, when I always kidded other people that wanted to get into administration, when you went to administration, your hourly rate dropped. and it still does, because if you do it right, because at the high school, and now it's worse than ever with all the women's activities and the music and everything, I'm still a firm believer that the principal should be there for all those activities. And they aren't always. I think some of them probably delegate somebody else and they don't show. But anyway, when Dale and I were running the high school.
This is Dale.
Dale Wyatt.
Dale Wyatt.
We were there for every music program, every athletic event. So, you know, it ended up that you were working probably Monday and Tuesday, usually wasn't much at night, but the rest of the week there was something going on, and one of us would always be there. And so my hourly rate dropped considerably, because I was, before when you were just teaching, you know, you were there from 8 till 4, and that was pretty much, you didn't have to go back at night. A lot of times I'd be there at 5, come home, grab a quick bite, and be back at 6:30 and not home till 10. Then you draw all the football games and taking money to the bank and all that stuff. You know, it made a lot of hours. You didn't do much of anything else during the school year.
Mm-hmm. So what'd you do in the summertime?
Well, we had a boat and had a dock down Snake River. Spent a lot of time down there on weekends and during the week even, and little fishing. And then there was still, it seemed like all of the vacations that Belle and I ever took were all either connected with an Elks convention or Confederation of Oregon School Administrators state meetings, and two board meetings a year at least on the ski programs.
You've been really active in civic organizations as well as your work at the school system and your teaching and your skiing and your skiing schools and all that. What Why do you think that it's important to be involved in those kinds of organizations?
Well, I always hated people who bitch about everything and don't do anything about it. And if all you do is complain, then you end up being part of the problem. And if you don't like something, why, maybe you better get involved and change it. And I'm not sure I ever changed a lot of things.
Have you seen your organizations, such as the Elks, change over the years?
Yeah. There's a different generation of people that don't join things like that. In fact, there was something on television news last night from Boise about the percent of drop in the Elks organizations and the Eagles and all the fraternal organizations. They've all taken a hit. I don't know whether there's so much more to do. Kids are involved in more things and they don't join those organizations.
So what was the reason why you joined the Elks when you did?
Well, it was kind of the social center of town. My dad had been a lifetime member of the Elks, and he kind of got me started. And then I think I gained a lot out of the Elks in having to memorize all that stuff of funeral organizations. You had to supervise the funerals and the initiations and all the stuff. I think it gave me a better outlook on education when I went back to school. Then I was serious about it. I don't know why they aren't popular anymore. But the city and the other things that you can do something about, I guess. Velva worked for the... That was another place I looked for a job when I went back to school, was city manager. I knew him and I went down to get a job.
Who was the city manager?
Fred Young was his name. And he said, most employees are full-time, but I sure need a secretary. And so I came home and told my wife, and she worked for the city for 15 years or 16.
She needs to be interviewed, too.
And somebody came, talked me into running for city council. Can't remember who. And Velva said, boy, you don't want to do that, because she'd been working for the city, you know. Mm-hmm. Knew all the meetings. And I did it anyway and got elected.
Okay, so you ran in what?
Okay, I ran for city council in 1982 and took over in, they changed in January, I guess, 83 to 90. Mm-hmm. So I was on there for 8 years, and I guess about 4 years as mayor, which is kind of a misnomer at that time, because really all the mayor is the chairman of the city council. You know, everybody was equal at that time. And after I quit, they changed the charter, have a separate mayor.
Mm-hmm. So what were your duties as mayor?
Well, as I said, at that time it was a 5-council body. The mayor is just elected by the council. And so your duties other than the council person is just to preside at the meeting. There's a tie vote, you break the vote. And then you're a figurehead as someone for people to meet if you want a representative of the city at any function. I know had to go to a state square dance convention here, and you had to go welcome them.
That's square dance?
Pardon?
Did you square
dance?
No.
But anyway, that was kind of the concept in there at that time.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember anything that you had to deal with at that time that was either really wonderful or really difficult?
Yeah, I learned one thing. In the public, things that are really important for the city or the government and whatever, the general public really doesn't pay much attention to it. Big money items, even, you know. But if you change the rules about dog control, you're going to get a crowd. The biggest crowd we ever had, I think, in the 8 years that I was on there was when there was a lot of complaints about animals running at large, and we were going to revise the animal ordinance thing, and a lot of rumors came out, and people came up with the idea that they were going to have leashes on all their cats and everything, you know. And when we had to vote for that thing, it filled the county or the city chambers, and people were standing in the hall. They were really irate about things that really weren't going to happen, but we were goofing around with their animals, and they didn't like that. And then you turn around and have a big thing and spend a lot of money, or a very important thing nobody cared about. Well, like, a thing that's really helped is the cooperation between fish and wildlife and the Big John out here on the affluent from, instead of dumping into the river, made the wetlands. Nobody really made comments about that, but it was really a good thing, a successful thing. The other thing we kind of council got in a little difficulty, and we had some complaints on it, I recall, is the state wanted to redo the main street through town, and so they tore up all the street, put in new sidewalks, and it was really, and the state paid for it. It was really a good thing for the city, but there was really about three or four downtown business people that just raised heck with us. And others were imaginative and did some creative thinking and keeping their businesses open, because it did disrupt the businesses that just faced Adams only, you know. Mm-hmm. Others made a rear entrance to their building and painted things down the alley, you know, to get people to go in, footprints on the wall and all that. So in the long haul, it was a good thing, but for a couple of months there, we took a little heat on being torn up.
Mm-hmm. Was that in the Middle
East? Yeah, I don't remember the exact date, but it was in the 80s, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Did you enjoy being the mayor?
Yeah, I kind of enjoyed being on the council.
Who was on the council at the time, do you remember?
Well, let's see, Dick Staub, and Roberta, her husband was on before I was on there. Susan Turley was on there when I was, and Bob Dalton, and when I first went on, Don Davidson was on, and he was mayor, and then he died while he was still on. And old Mike Taylor, school person, and he's superintendent of schools in Park Rose now. Somebody else. Anyway, yeah.
Yeah. Did you work well together? Did you feel like the councils that you?
Pretty much. I think when we were on there, I think we had a. There were some changes, you know, that they came and went. Susan Turley went off early, she left, but in general, I think we had a good council, and I think I would have preferred that it stayed old Di Larson Hill, and she was on there too, towards the end. I would have liked to have seen it just stayed as a five-person council and the mayor being chairman of the group as opposed to seven people now and the mayor separately elected. Mm-hmm. And I think LeGrand was one of the first cities to ever have the city manager form of government. And I think that's a positive thing, and they should stick with it. And that's kind of a strong manager, weak mayor form of government, mm-hmm. And every council person is equal. And I don't think you can get elected people that see Portland has the commissioner type. So you elect someone and they're the head of the police department or the head of the streets. And in general, the elected person doesn't have that kind of expertise. They aren't educated in those venues. So the council should be representing the people on what they want or think they want in terms of government. And then you hire the city manager to see that he does it. And if he doesn't follow the general direction of the council, then you fire him and you get another manager. But the council shouldn't be going out and telling Joe Blow that's patching streets how to do it. Mm-hmm. You don't get into that. That's the manager's job.
Well, I have one more question for you. What advice might you give for people living in LeGrand, whether they be teachers or students or mayors or councilmen or councilwomen? You can either maybe address this as, you know, what you see as the future for what's happening with LeGrand, or some advice that you might give, or besides just what you talked about, you know, for the betterment of the community. I mean, what advice might you give for future generations about being a civic leader, as a civic leader?
Well, I don't know what the answer would be on smaller communities like LeGrand that are losing their kind of quote downtown business types to the big superstores, and the population is more mobile and people don't think anything about going to Portland to do their shopping. Makes it rough on the small business owner. Like, there are no hardware stores downtown. There's no clothing stores except Penny's, no men's, women's. You know, it's kind of gone. I don't know what you would do to strengthen that. They have a pretty active downtown group now. That's fighting for business.
Do you think the library will help that?
I think anything that is, the new construction downtown has got to help, I think. That kind of created a little furor, too, is on the design of the library. But they've been fighting for 30 years to get a new library. So I think this has to be a little cooperation or a little give on each side. It might not be by quite what a lot in the community thinks it should be in design or location, but they've been trying to get one for so long that go ahead and get one and then, you know, live with it, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what the answer is for smaller communities, and yet you're starting to see a lot of people who have left LeGrand come back to retire. So it's a nice place to live, and you aren't troubled with the gang wars of the big urban areas.
So you've been happy living here?
I have been, yeah. You know, I don't the time I've spent, like on the council, going to other communities, on the ski activities of being in Seattle a lot, I wouldn't want to live there. They're nice to visit, but I wouldn't want to stay. If I had to commute to work like you do in Portland, Seattle, I'd probably quit.
So what's kept you here?
I suppose the lifestyle and maybe, but not being ambitious enough to fight the big city, I guess, and be part of it. Being a little, you are a little remote, all right, but, you know, you can be in Portland in 4 hours if you want to drive there. So, and I haven't really had any ambitions to be something that would require me to be in a big city, I guess. And maybe that's why I've kind of been active in a lot of local things, and I was lucky enough to be Man of the Year one time for the Chamber.
Remember what year that was?
Oh, no.
That's all right, we can look it up.
But that's the other thing. I think I'm not remembering dates, and I sat around trying to think of someone's name all the time, and I can tell you their whole history. Kind of like that picture, you know.
I was amazed that you knew as many names.
Tell
as
you
did
about
on
all of them, and but I might be able to have trouble with some names.
Mm-hmm.
Although, I guess that's a sign of old age. You remember old things better than current.
I think you're doing very well, actually. So you're going to keep skiing?
Yeah, for another year or two, see how it goes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But, and then historically, I guess, the other reason I haven't really been a person that pays a lot of attention to relatives. I'm an only child, and I have one cousin that lives in town, and that's it. But yet, McAllister Lane out here was named after my, what would he have been? I didn't ever know him, but he would be my great-grandfather.
Okay.
Dan McAllister was his name, and he homesteaded that old farm. I think Duane Fleet owns it now. It's on the middle of McAllister, down from the Grange Hall. It's on Geckler. Got all the cows in the barnyard and the mud.
Mm-hmm.
And that was my grandmother's father's place, and he raised racehorses and hauled them to Seattle and Portland on a train.
Hmm.
Well, they were the, what do you call them, a sulky two-wheeled cart that a guy rides, and then they're trotters, pacers, you know, and won a lot of ribbons, and then his son, Reese McAllister, that would have been my mom's uncle, I always called him my uncle, he took over and ran the ranch until he died, and then it went into the estate. And then my grandmother, that was a McAllister, married a Moss, and they were family, the Moss Chapel School was named after them out here on Hunter Lane.
Are they Moss Springs named after them too? Or?
Could have been, I don't know. But anyway, there was set of twins, and then they're all boys in the family, I think. about six or eight. One was a Salvation Army leader, and the others were farmers. And,
so you've had a lot of family history and stuff.
And so all of those, the Mosses and the Callisters, they're all buried here in town. I knew my grandfather, my dad's dad. He was a railroader back in Iowa, and my dad was from Ottumwa, Iowa, and came out here to make his fortune railroading.
Mm-hmm.
So I haven't really kept track of that, but other than that, and I do.
Would you like a drink or something? Could you give me a Sprite or Diet Coke?
Oh, no, thanks. I think we're just almost done here, but thanks very much, Melvin. Thanks.
Yeah.
That's okay. That's okay. Well, it just sounds like your family is all...
So they, they're all here, and then, of course, my one cousin, Phyllis Moss was her name, Blackman, and of course her married side of the Blackmans, they're longtime Island City people, and so we have quite a few pictures. I have some pictures of my grandfather and grandmother and this Reese McAllister and all of them on the house over here on Cedar. I think it's about This is 2108, it's 2107. Cedar was where they lived. And when we lived in the Dalles, I remember coming up and visiting them. I was probably in the fourth grade, and watching Ku Klux Klan march. They're pointed hats, and they burned a cross up on Table or on Rooster Peak.
Oh my God, what were they marching about?
Oh, Ku Klux Klan, they were the neo-Nazis at the time, I guess.
What were they angry about in the Grand?
I read some of the minutes of that, and they were pretty much, they were anti-Catholic, and they were anti-Chinese, and in those minutes, I read there was some restaurant that hired a Chinese cook, and they advocated boycotting the restaurant because of the Chinese cook.
So they marched down the street? Was that in the 30s?
Yeah, wow. That had probably been in 32, 31, 32, when we lived in the Dalles then.
Did you see them, or did your family tell you
that? Yeah, no, I remember seeing the cross on Rooster Peak. And then, as I recall, it was when they marched up Adams to burn the cross, I guess. We probably saw them then. But I don't remember where I saw them, but I can remember seeing them in their white sheets and pointed hats. And then after I read those minutes, and then that guy wrote a book. What was his name? He was in the Oregonian a while back. LeGrand was really a major place of Ku Klux Klan, and some of the local people that I knew later on were members of the Klan. I don't know where they had their meeting hall, but I remember seeing that cross. Of course, I didn't know what they were all about, then the political aspects of them. I guess they're still hanging around in Texas.
North Idaho.
North Idaho, Hayden Lake.
Fascinating. Yeah. Well, I really appreciate you, your memories. It's great.
The there was a, well, when we came back to La Grande, I remember there was an old Chinese guy that had a push cart. I remember seeing him around town. Hmm. And then over here, where are we? Well, where...
Was he selling vegetables or something? Or?
Yeah, and there was a lot of Chinese houses there where Commercial Tire is. And then on the lot where Safeway used to be, where they're building the library, there were some Chinese buildings there then. And,
so that they... Did they have laundries there?
I don't remember any laundry, no.
So just...
Old houses, and I think that guy lived there.
Where did they work, the people that lived in the Chinese
houses?
Well,
the railroad brought the Chinese in when it came into La Grande early on. That's how some of them stayed.
Mm-hmm.
And then my dad, there was a lot of Chinese in Reith running restaurants, and when my dad worked for the railroad, he used to bring me home letters that had come from China, that he made friends with some of these Chinese guys in the restaurants through the railroad, and they'd give me stamps, and I had a stamp collection, and give me letters, and wrote my name in Chinese, and, so...
Did you save any of those?
I don't know whether I have any of those things or not. I think that stamp collection's around here somewhere, but I have to look for them.
Mm-hmm.
But, they're really, when I was in high school, there wasn't much of a black community here at that time. In fact, there was two gals in high school when I was. One later became the first school administrator in Portland, Ellen Torrance Law. She just died here not too long ago. And then there was her brother was way ahead of me in high school. He was an outstanding athlete in high school and went to the University of Oregon. Of course, they didn't want black people.
So there was a black family in town?
Yeah, it was a Torrance family. They were
The
old time.
How were they treated at the high school?
I don't think we even thought of them as blacks. They were just another kid in school.
Mm-hmm.
And then even when... When I was teaching, later on, we had trices, and of course I had one of Field's kids in school, and sometimes I'm not sure that because there was such a few of them, they weren't sure that they were any different either. Because I remember Art Trice, who was still around town, was in school, and there was he and then his sister wasn't there yet. There's only about two other black kids in the high school, and when I was vice principal, and one day I looked out the back and I saw these two kids running across skipping school. And one of them was obviously Art. I mean, he showed up pretty good, you know. I didn't know who the white kid was with him. And anyway, the next day I caught Art and accused him of skipping school. And I don't know, where'd you go? And he says, how'd you know it was me? And I got to laughing about that. And I said, Art, you know, I don't know who the guy was with you, but you really showed up, and I know you were skipped. And I just wanted to let you know that I knew you, Skip.
Hmm.
So I don't think I did anything to him.
Hmm.
I didn't, still don't know who the kid he was with. But, yeah, there was some. And that Willie Torrance, I think he'd have probably been a great college ball player, but he got hurt. I think they probably hurt him on purpose. Which is kind of sad.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a Pullman car porter for years.
Here in town? Or?
Well, he went through town, and then mm-hmm. his family was still here.
Hmm.
Then my dad, he was on passenger trains too, and he made friends with, there was a lot of blacks on the cooks on the passenger trains, and one of them, when he retired, started a restaurant here in La Crane called John's Kitchen.
Oh, wow.
And it was in the old brick building, well, where the auto store is on Jefferson, and right across from the railroad. What's that side street? Elm, on mm-hmm. Elm. Anyway.
When was that operating, John's Kitchen?
Well, that was probably in 37, 36. And then there was a brewery along there, and it burned. And I think that might have put him out of business. But anyway, he was a cook on a passenger train. My dad made friends with him, and we used to go down there to dinner.
What and kind of food would he serve?
Oh, I remember he served good fried chicken. But it was kind of a general restaurant, and his experience was on a dining car. He's a really good cook. I don't remember what his name was other than John.
Hmm.
But, yeah, my dad, he thought he was a great guy. Anyway, we used to go there for dinner quite a bit.
Hmm.
That was, would have been when I was about eighth grade or a freshman.
Mm-hmm. After you moved back?
Yeah, after we lived back here.
Hmm. A lot of houses of ill repute.
Yeah, and they were kind of all over Pendleton. You know, they had the underground over there.
Mm-hmm.
And